Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:33 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time, and today is March 3rd. We had the UK budget in here today, and they are going to raise corporate taxes, but the UK is still rather competitive compared to other G7 countries. Nevertheless, it's likely to weigh most heavily on the domestic corporates rather than international corporations, because a lot of the bigger companies have more leeway to manipulate exactly how much they report in terms of profits. But gilts popped on the upside, gilt yields popped on the upside, up another 9 basis points, still holding the sequence of higher reaction lows, still trending higher. This is going to overturn the clear trend of lower debt servicing costs that predominated in 2020. We can see that this is a very substantial advance. It's a breakout from the range that formed for most of 2020. In fact, we have to go all the way back to 2016, right after the Brexit referendum, to see a spike in yields of any kind of magnitude similar to this, and then back to the taper tantrum in 2013. I think perhaps the biggest parallels we have today are with the taper tantrum, because the bond market seems to be increasingly of the opinion that central banks are going to have to taper assistance. And asset prices have been rising rather quickly, so that's obviously something that is weighing on sentiment, because this has been a liquidity-fueled bull market since late 2008, and it continues to be heavily dependent on liquidity. 10-year Treasury yields in the USA continue to extend their breakout. They've exceeded the peak from back in March. It's a much more exaggerated advance, and pushing now towards the lower side of that overhead trading range. When we then look out at longer maturity bonds, like the 30-year, then it has already pushed back up and into the overhead trading range, and it is still establishing itself above the 2% level. Central banks are in a bit of a quandary, because they've cut interest rates to the bone. The governments that they are responsible to have massively increased the quantity of debt that's outstanding. The cost of servicing that debt contracted last year because interest rates were so low. The only possible way to control that debt is to inflate it away. There is just absolutely no way that we're going to head towards fiscal consolidation. There is zero tolerance for that kind of sacrifice among rest of populations. That's before they're even suggested. We can only imagine what kind of social unrest we would have after they would be implemented. So that does suggest that we are looking at the potential that there's going to have to be some form of yield curve control, because the governments of the world, particularly those in the G7, simply cannot afford to service the costs of their debts, which means they're going to inflate them away. So anyone who thinks that the central banks are immediately going to raise interest rates is probably going to be in for something of a surprise. But central banks are not going to intervene without a good reason. And the good reason would be a significant pullback in the stock market. The performance of the stock market is one of the primary vehicles they use to measure the success of their policies. So the NASDAQ 100 hit a new reaction low in here today. It's been leading, or it's being led lower by some of the largest companies. So Amazon was right in the region of the trend mean last week, and it broke below it in here this week, and now testing that psychological 3,000 level, which has offered support since July of last year. But this is a substantial loss of momentum. And particularly when we look at these types of chart patterns, where we had this incredible acceleration, and then subsequently some failed breaks on the upside, It's now broken the sequence of higher reaction lows. There is the clear potential here that we're looking at type 2 top formations in development. That's equally true, for example, of NVIDIA, where it also surged on the upside. We've had the clear loss of momentum. Then we definitely had the failed upside break 2 weeks ago. It's coming right back down to test the lower side of the range and the region of the trend mean, and it's going to have to rally smartly in order to question that this isn't an evolving top formation similar to the kind of condition that it put in the latter part of 2018. Then we can also think about Apple. It's not like Apple isn't subject to occasional bouts of extraordinary volatility. In fact, it's practically to be expected. If we simply throw this up on a log scale chart and look at it over the course of the last decade, well, we can see then that we have plenty of examples where it has pulled back in an extremely violent manner, and each one of those pullbacks has found support in the region of the upper side, or in the region of the previous peak, or the upper side of the underlying range. Well, that would suggest that Apple could pull back by an additional third, and it would still then only be testing the region of the upper side of the most recent range. So we definitely have some potential here for a significant drawdown if interest rates continue to firm. And until we see clear evidence of action from central banks, well, that has to be the base case. Then when we think about the S&P 500, well, it has been handicapped to a certain extent by the introduction of companies like Tesla. And Tesla has been subject to a lot of volatility over the course of the last week as well. But it's also a company that is extremely interest rate sensitive. So it has pulled back in a very sharp manner, considering the fact that not all that long ago it was at $900. And today it's at $650. So it could easily pull back to $500, and even then that would only be the region of the trend mean and the upper side of the last range. So we're still in a corrective phase overall. There are a couple of things that I think are particularly relevant. One thing that seems to have been a signal was that we had these comparisons being made about Apple back in, I think it was in August, that Apple was worth more than the entire Russell 2000. And not long after that, Apple peaked and the Russell started to take off. And the Russell is now really quite overbought, and we might yet see some additional consolidation, but it's not perhaps at the same risk as some of the companies that have been rallying for a decade already. The other big comparison that we had, and this one was in December and January, was that Tesla's market cap exceeded that of the entire energy sector. So that is also a bit of a standout. And since then, Tesla has done little but contract, and energy has done little but advance. So these sorts of very odd situations, which are just examples of outright contradictions, because how could a company that produces less than 500,000 cars a year and is only capable of turning a profit because of carbon credit arbitrage, how could that possibly be worth more than the entire energy sector, which is the still, regardless of every story to the contrary, is the bedrock of the global economy. And since then, the energy sector has continued to rally. When we then think about the oil price, it is starting to moderate, but it was up in here today, and there were not many commodities that were in positive territory today. So, and that is despite the fact that when we think about volumes and stockpiles, they're rising. But we're definitely seeing more interest in reflation, more interest in people thinking about, well, what will do well in an inflationary environment? Well, oil is obviously one of those. Then we can think about some of the better performing stocks off the back of the budget in the UK today. Well, the banking sector was in really quite strong territory and is breaking up and out of this little range. Virgin Money was a share that was leading on the upside for the banks, and Micro Focus International, which is a small, or I guess it focuses on smaller lending, was also has been very low indeed. It's probably best just to put the chart up. When we think about the difficulties that the company has gone through, and the fact that they've been plagued by scandal, it's, I think, also worth considering that the price was at 3,500 in 2017, and it's only at 500 today. So a lot of bad news is already in the price, and it is firming from the region of the trend mean at present. So the banking sector should do well as yields rise and as yield curve spreads expand. When we do think about that yield curve spread, it has been trending higher now for the last 3 or 4 months, and doing so in a rather aggressive manner, up to 134 basis points. Every time we've seen an inverted yield curve, it's as the yield curve spread accelerates away from an inverted condition. That's generally the period of time when stock markets feel the most pressure. That was certainly true in 2007 and 8. It was also true from 2000 through to 2003, and then we had a big inverted yield curve in 89 through to 92 as well. It's when the yield curve spread starts to come back down that is generally when stock markets bottom. So perhaps we've got the cart in front of the horse a little bit in terms of what happened with the stock market on this occasion, because we've already had a very substantial rebound following the big panic in 2020. Now we've got short-term overbought conditions. I personally think that the Federal Reserve is waiting for the market to tell it when to intervene. And I think we're starting to approach that point right now. With yields rising, we're starting to see evidence of stress in the most highly valued portions of the stock market. The value sector is starting to outperform growth. And one of the biggest arguments for why value has been underperforming for such a long time is because of low interest rates. You need to have a discount rate in order for or to make the kinds of value judgments that go into a value strategy. If you don't have something, a benchmark against which to compare value to, it's just not going to work. And on the other side of the spectrum, growth does best when there is no, growth does best when there is no discount rate, because they depend on access to abundant cheap liquidity. So we're seeing that this there's definitely a change going on right now, and with the energy sector and the banking sector doing better, and then the miners and the commodities sector also doing better, although we can definitely think about the fact that copper pulled back rather sharply in here today. But it's still trending higher and still coming off of rather depressed levels. This is not the same kind of condition that we have with some of the technology shares, which have been rallying for years. So there's no question that copper prices are overbought in the short term and susceptible to additional consolidation, and that could be quite violent. We're definitely seeing that gold prices remain under pressure, and we're down again in here today, down $25, testing the $1,700 level. the price paused at $1,900, $1,800. Now it's pausing at $1,700. Every time, when it came back to 19, it rallied to 2,000. When it came back to 18, it rallied to 19. And now the question is, when it comes back to 17, is it going to rally back towards 18 before breaking downwards again? Because that's where the consistency of the trend is pointing right now. In order to question that consistency, we're going to have to at least see a sustained move above the $1,800 level. But we also have to consider that gold is responding right now to the clear environment that we have in the bond markets, that CPI inflation has not taken off, but bond yields have. So negative real interest rates are coming back up towards zero. And that compression, or I guess it's really an expansion in that yield, is now starting to weigh on gold. But that's only likely to remain relevant until we in fact do see intervention by central banks. So gold is increasingly coming back towards a buying range, whereas stock markets are still susceptible to additional weakness. And when we do eventually get some clear intervention by central banks, well, then it's likely that people will start to return to gold. There's this running argument going on at the present time among institutional investors whether it's better to own Bitcoin than gold. And certainly we've seen a lot of money coming into the Bitcoin price right now. But the one thing that's worth considering is that Bitcoin is completely unregulated. And the reason that they shot down an ETF back in 2017 was because it is completely unregulated. Now, just because we have more institutions playing around in the cryptocurrency markets and more companies are willing to transact in cryptocurrencies, it doesn't necessarily mean that retail investors should then have a vehicle made available to them for speculation, which would be an ETF. It was shot down 4 years ago. Perhaps it's going to get permissioned on this occasion. But if it is shot down again, well, the last time it was shot down, which was in 2017, and the Winklevoss twins were really trying to get it passed, the Bitcoin price pulled back by about 30%. So we've definitely seen a rebound from the lows, and I think this is much more about anticipation of the potential for an ETF rather than any real big institutional buying at present. If we can continue to see that low hold, well, then this will still be a consistent trend. The size of the pullbacks has been relatively similar. It is finding support in the region of the upper side of the most recent range. You've got ranges one above another. And when we look at the log scale chart, then we can clearly see that this has been a very impressive breakout from a well-defined trading range. And it's still a consistent trend overall. So until we start to see it coming back below $40,000, then there's no reason to question the consistency of the trend. So far, this reaction is only approximately 2 weeks in duration. The last one was nearly 5 weeks in duration. So we could still be in a lengthier period of consolidation. But the one thing we certainly know about cryptocurrencies is that they are extraordinarily volatile. When we then think about Ethereum, it has also bounced from the region of the upper side of its most recent range, and it was in additional positive territory in here today. And as long as it's holding the low put in just last week, well, then we can also conclude that this is still a recovery candidate. We're also definitely starting to see increasing interest in a whole range of altcoins. There is an argument that Bitcoin is a more effective hedge against inflation than gold, but the big challenge for cryptocurrencies is the question of durability. They are still very young. there is a whole world of possible options available to them, and it is really the world is their oyster because they're trying to interlope into all manner of different financial transactions which have not classically been available to invest in. So that's obviously something that is sparking a lot of attention, and there are large numbers of small teams working on all kinds of different solutions to problems. So there's certainly a use case for Bitcoin at some point out there in the future. But quite whether it is worth $50,000 per Bitcoin is probably much more about the devaluation of fiat currencies than any other factor. The reality is that gold has been an asset for thousands of years, and you can still hold it in your hands. You cannot hold Bitcoin in your hands. And the reality is, when you're thinking about, I think, insuring against worst case scenarios, well, you can think about gold in terms of the Bond film Goldfinger, where they were looking to irradiate a large quantity of gold, and that would have inflated the price of all the other gold. But an EMP device could knock out a huge quantity of Bitcoin. A solar flare could eradicate a lot of Bitcoin. These are the kinds of problems that are out there that cannot be hedged against. So when we think about what the future is, well, there's probably a rosy future, but it's not the kind of asset that one can deploy all of one's savings into. It's a speculative asset, and because it's necessarily speculative, because we don't know what the future holds, just like many other assets, and therefore, in this case at least, diversification is certainly something that's advisable. And I think with that, I'll leave it for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.